This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
In the news this month, seven exciting new planets, and the rise and fall of emergent gravity. Astronomers once again pushed the boundaries of the field of exoplanets this month, with the announcement of the discovery of a system of seven Earth-sized rocky planets orbiting a single star. A press release on the 23rd of February detailed the discovery of the planets orbiting TRAPPIST-1, a red dwarf star some 40 light-years away from Earth. The system was first observed by a group of scientists from the University of Liège in Belgium, as you may have guessed from the name. TRAPPIST is a rather heavy-handedly constructed acronym for Transiting Planets and Planetesimals Small Telescope South, and refers to an instrument at the La Silla Observatory in Chile. TRAPPIST-1, in the direction of the constellation Aquarius, is a very unsun-like star, being some 2,000 times dimmer and far cooler than the Sun, and being only marginally bigger than the planet Jupiter, albeit 80 times as massive. This means that the planets named TRAPPIST-1 B to H also have a number of very unusual properties. All are packed in extremely close to their parent star, lying between 0.01 and 0.06 AU, all smaller distances than that between the Sun and Mercury. This proximity means that the years on the seven planets are all incredibly short, lasting only between 1.5 and 20 Earth days. There are some good reasons to refer to these planets as Earth-like, however. The masses of all seven are comparable to Earth, ranging from 0.4 to 1.4 Earth masses, and three of the planets apparently lie in the Goldilocks zone of the system, residing at the right distance from the star for it to be possible that liquid water may exist on their surface. The release of the news was heavily trailed by NASA, whose Spitzer Space Telescope had pointed at the system for 20 continuous days to follow up the original TRAPPIST observations. The Belgian team, led by Michael Guillon, had used the transit method, whereby planets are detected by the tiny change in brightness they cause when transiting across the face of their parent star, to detect three of the TRAPPIST-1 planets as of May last year. The Spitzer observations added significantly to this, finding that one of the three was in fact three different planets, and detecting two more, making the total of seven, and taking data on a total of 34 different transit events. Reaction to the discovery amongst the astronomical community echoed that which has met similar discoveries in the past few years, of quiet enthusiasm, and cautions that such planets may be very unlikely to host life. Many were quick to point out, as usual, that Venus counts as an Earth-like planet in the Goldilocks zone, but is very far from being habitable, and that the close orbits of the TRAPPIST-1 objects mean they will be tidally locked, with one side of each planet perpetually facing the star. This will likely create very extreme weather conditions on any of the planets lucky enough to host an atmosphere, making the evolution of life tricky, to say the least. We will still be studying the system closely, though, with both the Hubble and James Webb Space Telescopes expected to make future observations looking for information about the composition of any atmosphere on the planets. The TRAPPIST-1 system is yet another, new exoplanet system which shows us the extraordinary diversity of planets just in our own galaxy, and shows how far humanity's observational skills have improved in a few short years. Exoplanet expert David Charbonneau of Harvard University pointing out on Twitter that the first planet ever discovered using the transit method was in fact bigger than the star in the TRAPPIST-1 system. Also in the news this month was the precipitous fall of a previously promising candidate for a simultaneous explanation of the strange phenomena of dark matter and dark energy. A description of the theory originally appeared in November 2016 in a paper placed on the archive server by Erik Verlinde of the University of Amsterdam. Verlinde's paper described a version of gravity very different to Einstein's general relativity. Rather than being a fundamental property of physics, describing how light and matter follow paths in curved spacetime, Velinda's gravity is a macroscopic-only property which emerges from complicated microscopic physics, just as the complicated process of global weather emerges from the microphysics of thermodynamics of individual and groups of molecules. Theories of emergent gravity have existed for a number of years, but Velinda's was interesting as it was the first to posit a solution to both problems of dark energy and dark matter. Instead of being a property of the geometry of curved spacetime, here gravity is a representation of the entangled information stored in the quantum bits, or qubits, of the universe. Ordinary bits, as used in classical computers, have values of either 0 or 1, but qubits are quantum, and hence weird, meaning they can exist in superpositions of both states at once. The probabilities that the different qubits will take on a given value can also become entangled, meaning their values become related over very large distances. In emergent gravity, it is these entanglements which create the pull exerted by different clumps of mass on one another. In this theory, dark energy, the reason we observe the expansion of the universe to be accelerating, comes from the thermal excitation of the qubits, as if they have all been shaken up and driven further apart. Velinda also argued that in the presence of ordinary matter, often called baryonic matter by cosmologists, these dark energy entanglements could be disrupted, creating an elastic response which actually increases the gravitational attraction in these regions of space. The upshot, after 40 pages of detailed calculation and arguments, is that this extra attraction actually looks a lot like that caused by dark matter, the other great unknown in our large-scale understanding of the universe. This theory thus kills two birds with one stone, and was met with much excitement. Shortly after, another paper by a group of prominent observational cosmologists in December lended further credence to the idea. The group, led by Margot Brewer of Leiden University, also in the Netherlands, calculated the expected distortions of images of background galaxies caused by gravitational lensing by galaxies which formed in a universe with Velinda's emergent gravity. They were able to show that the mass structures of the lensing galaxies in the new theory were at least as consistent with the observations as the structures of lensing galaxies in the standard old Lambda CDM cosmology, containing both dark matter and dark energy. This all sounds great, but the lensing paper in December was met with a strong scepticism by many, who pointed out many apparent naiveties in the analysis, which assumed the galaxies were spherical, point-like masses, and that the emergent gravity theory was able to somehow produce both the gravitational lensing effect and the whole concept of a universe expanding at an accelerating rate in the first place. Further daggers to Velinda's heart came on Valentine's Day this year, when two papers were released at the same time, showing that the emergent gravity theory was actually inconsistent with a number of other observations. One, by Federico Lelli, Stacey McGaw, and James Schombert, creates simple models for disk galaxies, but not as simple as spherical points in emergent gravity. They find that their models predict such galaxies would be much fainter, by a factor of up to 2 for a given mass, than that which is inferred by a whole slew of observations. The second paper, by Aurélien Hies, Benoît Fame, and Gianfranco Bertone, replicates this finding, also showing that it would be possible to reconcile the differences, but only by adopting a value for the Hubble constant, our measurement of how quickly the universe is expanding today, which is again far lower than that allowed by a whole other set of observations spanning the past 3 decades. In addition, they retreat to a situation where the simple calculations currently possible within the emergent gravity model should be most valid, in our own solar system, where bodies such as the Sun are extremely spherical and comparatively small. Here, they again find a large discrepancy with observations, showing that there are 7 orders of magnitude, that is a factor of 10 million, between the departures expected from Newtonian gravity and those which have been actually observed. It will be interesting to see if emergent gravity can be saved, either with more detailed calculations or additions to account for the observational results, but it has already served as an excellent high-speed demonstration of how theories are tested in modern cosmology.